This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Dateline NBC's series To Catch a Predator uses actors who pose as teenagers, underage kids, to lure older men into what they think will be sexual encounters. And it's surprisingly easy to find such men online. By the show's count, hundreds so far, dozens of whom have either pleaded guilty or been convicted. NBC News doesn't run the stings. That's the work of Perverted Justice, an online watchdog group. And once the meeting's all set, the would-be molester is surprised by the show's host, Chris Hansen.
Did you have a hard time finding the place? Or?
Yeah, man.
You got lost, huh?
Yeah, who are you?
Well, who are you?
I'm Dennis.
After an often awkward and humiliating conversation, the man leaves and is then swarmed by police officers who've been waiting outside. To Catch a Predator raises some uncomfortable questions about the number of sexual predators online, for sure, and about journalism, too. The program pays its sources and works closely with police. Some critics worry that this show isn't fair and that it doesn't cover news but creates news. Of course, many other critics praise it as an important public service. Later in the program, a closer look at the newest casualty numbers for Iraqi civilians. But first, Predator TV. What do you think? Voyeurism or busting predators, crime fighting or entrapment? The number to give us a call is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. We begin with Dateline NBC correspondent Chris Hansen, the host of To Catch a Predator, and he joins us by phone from LaGuardia Airport in New York City. Nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
I know you've done more than half a dozen of these stings in various parts of the country. What is it like walking into that room time after time?
Well, each time, you know, the first time you go out there, you know, your heart's in your throat a little bit. It's a little anxious. But more often than not, we have the element of surprise on these guys who come in. And as we see time and time again, most of the guys actually sit down and talk. It's almost as if they want to get this off their chest. Some of the guys have even seen the program before, and it's almost like, oh, you're that guy, this is that show, you want me to sit over here.
They've seen the show before. I guess it isn't much of a deterrent.
Well, I think for some people it is, and we see this in the chat rooms when the guys are talking to the decoys. Often they will say, okay, is this Dateline, or even tell Chris Hansen I said hello. But you have these guys who I think have a compulsion or an addiction that overrides their ability to say, okay, I might get caught here. And I think other guys figure, well, you know, the police can't be everywhere. Dateline can't be everywhere. What are the chances I'll get caught?
Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that's been asked by your critics is about proportionality. This is certainly a problem, one you've certainly exposed. Nevertheless, is it worth going back time and time and time again? There's so many other great stories out there in the world. What makes this worth hour after hour after hour of primetime television?
Well, certainly it's compelling television. I mean, you know, it is what it is. But we reevaluate this every time we do it. We ask ourselves these same questions that the critics ask of us. And thus far, it's been, you know, our position that this is a continuing story and it warrants further attention. Now, you know, will we continue to do it as frequently as we have over the past year and a half? We'll have to see.
We're going to have a gentleman, one of the founders of pervertedjustice.com, on later. But I wanted to ask about NBC's relationship with this group, which after, I guess, the first couple of episodes said, well, you know, we're not going to provide this service for free. Other people would be interested in doing this television program. And essentially, they negotiated a fee, which has been reported to be something like $100,000 to $150,000 per episode. I know NBC doesn't confirm or deny that number, but that's what it's reported to be. Is it usual for reporters to be paying their sources?
Well, you know, you have to look at it as an entity beyond a source. I mean, we pay retired generals, for instance, to give us insight on the Gulf War. We pay retired FBI agents to give us insight into serial killers. Perverted Justice allowed us use of its decoys and its personnel for three investigations. And it got to the point where Chris Hansen's getting paid for doing this, Chris Hansen's producers are getting paid for doing this, and Chris Hansen's cameramen are getting paid for doing this. you know, at some point, we just didn't think it was fair to ask perverted justice to do it without getting paid.
As I'm sure you know, critics have pointed out, there's a difference between paying a general who's neither apparently for or against the war, for or against certain conduct of the war, is dispassionate, and paying an advocacy group which comes into this with a distinct point of view.
Well, we're paying for their expertise. We're paying for their decoys and their ability to do this kind of work, which is something that not very many people can do. We are very transparent about this in our stories. The first time this issue came up, you know, we laid it all on the table during that particular investigation.
We're speaking with Chris Hansen, a correspondent for NBC News who works on the To Catch a Predator series on Dateline NBC. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And why don't we start with Alan? Alan is calling us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hey, I just wanted to point out, you know, Chris Hansen just said that these people have an addiction or, you know, an obsession, and I don't think that's always necessarily the case. A lot of these people are, it's the first time they've ever responded to anything like this, and I think there should be a national dialogue about why, in particular, so many American men seem to be attracted to very, very young people or are so excited by very, very young females in particular. When they are confronted with the dialogue that they were typing in the emails, in the chat rooms, the people posing as the youngsters are saying extremely vulgar things. They're not saying, ooh, ick, get away from me. They're saying, what do you want to do to me? Where do you want to touch me? And these guys are very excited by this, and I just think it's an entrapment. I think it's these people are in these chat rooms. They're set up purposely to entice these people to get them extremely sexually aroused, and I think that's what, you know, this leads to is, you know, more about why are people so interested in these very young people. I don't think we should be writing everyone off as a pedophile or someone with an addiction because of this. I think it's mm-hmm. entrapment, and it's just a very, it just opens up a whole world that of judgment that isn't necessarily always true and always the case.
Mm-hmm. Chris Hansen.
Well, I respect what you're saying. However, you know, we don't label these guys as pedophiles. Pedophiles have a very specific definition, people who are interested in prepubescent sex. What we're talking about here are potential predators. And if you take a look at the protocol that's used, the potential predator always has to make the first move. In other words, the decoy is in a chat room with a profile up, which contains a picture that is unquestionably underage. So first off, the potential predator has to make the first contact. And then, in virtually every case, the subject of sex is brought up by the potential predator. Now, have we had men come in for the very first time? I think we have. But without exception, almost, these guys tell me it's their first time, and I just can't believe each one of them is telling me the truth.
Alan, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Joining us now is Douglas McCollum. He wrote about the To Catch a Predator series in an article called The Shame Game in this month's issue of the Columbia Journalism Review. And he joins us today from the studios of member station WWNO. They've got to catch the number of W's there in New Orleans. Nice to have you on the program today.
Well, thanks for having me.
In your story, you conclude your story by writing, the distinction between enterprise and entertainment can be a difficult one. Dateline hasn't so much covered a story as created one. In the process, it has further compromised the barrier between reporters and cops that is central to the mission of journalism. If humiliating perverts and needlessly terrifying parents is the best use that News Magazine can make of hours of primetime TV, then perhaps they should be allowed to die and the time given over to the blood sport of reality programming. What is your basic objection here? And I wanted to give you a chance to say something and give Chris Hansen a chance to respond before he has to go.
Well, sure. I think the most troubling aspect of the show, or one of the most troubling aspects of the show, is its close cooperation with law enforcement. Originally, in the first two programs, they didn't have arrest, and I think that was troubling to viewers. They desperately wanted these guys picked up. And so they changed the format. They started working with police, and I think that all journalists or anyone interested in journalism has to be troubled when you see too much close coordination between a news division, a respected news division like NBC News, and law enforcement. So it's not so much a reporting of the news as sort of a creating of a sting operation like the police themselves might do.
And Chris Hansen, I don't know if you've had a chance to see that story in the Columbia Journalism Review yet.
Absolutely. And you know, look, Douglas is entitled to his point of view. However, you know, having been there and been involved in these stories, there is a separation between the police and our operation. We do what we do. Perverted Justice provides us with the chat logs. We do the interview with these guys. They leave. Perverted Justice has provided the information requested by the police from them, and then the police, who are running their parallel investigation, take action after that. You know, do we review this? Did we have to put a lot of time into it? Yes, but when you compare the first two investigations where these guys walked off to what is happening now where, you know, they're facing justice, I think you know, it's for the greater good.
And
at the end of the day, you know, this is absolutely an investigative technique that is new. But we had to come up with a new way to cover what we felt was a new and troublesome crime, and this is what we did. At the end of the day, it's not that much different from the undercover or hidden camera or sting-like techniques that we used in India to expose child slave labor in the silk industry, or in Bangladesh to expose conditions in factories, or in Cambodia to expose sex tours.
And we just have a few seconds left, but
sure.
Parallel investigation. The cops would have been there anyway? Clearly not.
No, clearly not. The police have, in most cases, contacted Perverted Justice and have said, look, we're interested in doing something like this. We need your expertise. We set up our investigation separate to that of the police.
Chris Hansen, thanks very much. We know you're busy, just about to catch a flight. We appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Chris Hansen, a correspondent for NBC News and host of To Catch a Predator on Dateline NBC. Doug McCollum is going to stay with us at the studios of WWNO in New Orleans. I got it right that time. We're going to take a short break. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Back after the break, it's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the Dateline series To Catch a Predator, which is on NBC TV, and the debate over whether the show provides a public service or raises troubling issues of ethics. Still with us is Douglas McCollum. He wrote the article called The Shame Game in this month's Columbia Journalism Review. It looks at the journalism behind To Catch a Predator. As always, you're welcome to join us. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And Douglas McCollum, I have to ask you, we didn't get a chance while Chris Hansen was on the line, but there have been dozens of men who have either confessed to or been convicted of crimes as a result of this investigation. Surely that's not insignificant.
It's not insignificant, and I think that you know, the purpose of my article was not to defend the men that are involved in these things. They're pretty unsavory lot as a whole. My focus was really on whether or not this was the sort of operation that a journalist or news division should be involved in, even as opposed to, say, a group like Perverted Justice, which is sort of an internet watchdog group.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's perfectly within their rights to partner with police and do that. The question is, should Dateline NBC be working in close cooperation with Perverted Justice and the police and paying Perverted Justice as part of the bargain?
So the fairness of what's done here to catch the men, that's not an issue for you. It's the fairness of what happens when suddenly there are TV cameras rolling?
Well, I think that it's more that the techniques used are appropriate for the police or for a sting operation, but traditionally not the kind of things we see in journalism. Chris is right to point out there are undercover operations that go on, and there's some very famous journalistic undercover operations that have happened in the past. But I think that journalists always view that with a little bit of caution or a lot of caution, and usually use it as a last resort when there's simply no other way to report the story. And I don't think that's certainly the case with internet a child or underage sex solicitation. There are other ways to do the story.
Let's get a caller on the line. This is Karen. Karen's with us from Columbia, South Carolina.
Hi, thanks.
Sure.
The program is really a horrible necessity. The biggest obstacle in the American public to this entire issue is the belief that predators are somehow identifiable because they look nasty and horrible, and you can see them, and you immediately know that they are predators. This show reveals that they are extremely ordinary people. That's the positive contribution. The show, however, over-sensationalizes this moment of confrontation. And in that moment, Chris Hansen asks people over and over again, why did you do this? Didn't you know this was wrong? And they sit there and obviously either lie or deny what they're doing. We're left with no explanations for the motivations and expectations for this kind of behavior from a shockingly, to the ordinary public, huge, huge number of American men. The first guy you had to call in, Alan, asked the question, why are so many American men mesmerized by this particular kind of sexual contact? If you hear what they put in their postings, they tell a lot about what they want, what their expectations are. When they're asked to confront that reality, they can't do it, and nobody else on the show goes any further. The show makes a contribution, but God, it could make so much more of a contribution. And it doesn't, and I'm really disappointed in that.
Doug McCollum, I wonder if you had a reaction to that.
Raises a couple of points. One of my other problems with the show is I think that perhaps it gives the impression, by virtue of the fact that it revisits the issue over and over and over again, and is such compelling television, that this is sort of a growing trend or a growing menace. But there's very little data to support that. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children did a statistical survey in 2005 where it sampled 1,500 children between 10 and 17 who used the Internet. Of those 1,500, only two had been sexually assaulted as a result of some sort of contact online, and both of those were one was a 15-year-old girl and one was a 16-year-old girl who had agreed to meet and go to social functions with someone online. So I'm not saying the problem doesn't exist. It does exist, and it is serious. But the question is, does the show give an outsized fear of what is going on? And, you know, a good example of that came when the Attorney General of the United States, Alberto Gonzalez, set up a task force to look into this. And when he had the press conference to do it, he cited this number of 50,000 Internet predators going after children online at any one time. When a reporter checked that out and asked where that number had come from, it had come from Dateline. And when they found the FBI consultant who Dateline cited as the source, he called it a Goldilocks number. Not too big and not too small, and a number that had been used in other scandals like the preschool sex abuse scandal in the 80s and the number of people, children abducted by strangers every year. So I think that the show creates this impression that there's a huge wave of this going on, and I'm just not sure the statistical information backs that up.
Again, not to deny that it's not going on. It is.
Absolutely not. It is going on.
Effectively saying they're scaremongering.
May I make a comment?
Go ahead, Karen.
To that, the question of whether it's increasing sort of, again, moves our attention away from the fact that it may not be increasing. It may have always been this large. Nobody discussed child sexual predation. Nobody discussed rape until about 30 years ago with any integrity or accuracy. We have an opportunity to talk about why this happens. And we don't get that information. And again, with great respect for the gentleman from the Columbia Journalism Review, he's moving our attention again.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to look at this. We're constantly berated with information that the people who prey sexually on women and children and boys are some kind of weird, strange, perverted whack jobs who are easily identifiable. The closer the media comes to the reality of what actually happens, the more we want to move our eyes, because it is just horrific to look at. And I think, quite frankly, a huge opportunity is being lost by the people at this program. And, quite frankly, Alan isn't helping us, again, move our eyes back to the real dilemma. Thanks for the information.
Karen, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it. Xavier Van Eerck is the founder of the group Perverted Justice, which is the online watchdog group that lures suspected online predators into the stings run by Dateline. He joins us from his home in Portland, Oregon, where he's snowed in. I'm sorry you're suffering the ravages of all that snow, but thanks for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
And how did this group get started?
We got started because, I mean, typically in America, the problems you deal with are the problems you see. We were a group of chatters ourselves, and in the rooms, when you are a chatter and you're in there, you know, almost on a daily basis, you'll see guys come in and say, are there any 15-year-old girls in here who would like to make money? You'll see individuals come in brazenly in front of everyone in the chat room, openly soliciting any minors that are potentially in there. After about 6 months and thinking, you know, the police will arrest these guys and they'll come in and these guys won't be around anymore, and seeing the same guys over and over again, we decided to start the organization.
So this wasn't nobody in your family, nobody you knew was victimized?
Well, I mean, almost everybody in America knows someone who has been victimized either by a stranger predator or a predator within their family. But I hadn't known anyone myself who had been victimized by an internet predator. Unfortunately, throughout the years of doing this, we've met many who have been.
Mm-hmm. And when did the TV part come in? Was that the idea from the beginning?
No, the idea from the beginning was that we might have a newspaper interview someday.
Mm-hmm.
We started out very grassroots. And, you know, over time, over the next couple of years, we had a couple local television stings. Dateline had seen one of them in Detroit, Michigan, and had contacted us about doing it on a bigger stage.
And at what point did the police become involved? Was that only until the Dateline series started?
We had been getting arrests before we had ever talked to Dateline NBC, but obviously the work with Dateline NBC had put our work, you know, public. Police were able to see the shows and see the guys show up and see the fact that, you know, the work we did had results. And that's why it was the third episode you saw police get involved and start arresting them outside of the house.
Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to get your response to our earlier caller and to some of the things also that Doug McCollum was saying. Is this a problem that is being overblown by Dateline NBC and I guess by Perverted Justice, which continues to work with them?
The ironic thing about the McCollum column is the day he wrote it, I was on the phone with a family in California whose 12-year-old boy had been solicited by an online pedophile. The pedophile had gotten the boy to be on his child sexuality podcast and was grooming him over a period of a year. We have a full response piece on our website detailing the fact-checking that was not done with the McCollum story. This crime is incredibly common. What's not common, though, is for the victims to step forward. Because the Internet is so new, most of the victims of Internet predators are still underage. They're not exactly going to come forward to the media and say, yes, I was raped by a child predator. In the vast majority of these cases, the victims will never come forward and will never tell their story to the media because they're still so young.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the next 10 years, you're going to see a lot of individuals stepping forward and saying, yeah, me too. We have a lot of individuals who volunteer with us. We've had 45,000 people sign up for our forums, and a good percentage of them had contact with Internet predators themselves. So when McCollum says the research isn't out there to suggest that this crime is as large as people are saying it is, that's because there's really no good research that's been done on this crime yet. There hasn't been enough time to pass.
Doug McCollum?
Well, to the extent there is statistical data out there, though, it doesn't really support that this is a huge crime wave or that this is a growing problem.
There's not good long-term research. Anyone with an idea of criminology knows that you need, you know, decades of sampling before you can come to any...
And Mr. Van Eerck, I'm just going to ask you to let him speak. He let you speak.
Sure,
please go ahead.
Well, to the extent there is the data, I think Xavier makes a valid point, which is to say there isn't a tremendous amount of data out there. That's true. And he has access, by virtue of his work, to a tremendous amount of anecdotal data based on the work he does. But I say again, to the extent that the research is there and to the extent that groups like the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children have looked at this, they don't see a huge uptick. And, in fact, in the latest 2005 survey, they noticed that certain numbers of unwanted solicitations had actually dropped off, in part because the kids are savvy. I mean, they just don't go in chat rooms as much as they used to. I think Xavier's right to say that there are, you know, certainly unsavory characters and hang out in these rooms, and a lot of the kids just blow it off. Now, some do get caught up in this. Some, too, you know, there's some great and horrific, horrible stories about kids getting caught up in sort of a relationship or an online relationship with a pedophile and being lured into sexual activity. There's no question it happens. My issue, and I want to make clear that I'm making a distinction between Dateline NBC and perverted justice, is that the news media and news divisions, I think, have to be careful and exercise care when they sort of get into what are essentially law enforcement activities, mm-hmm. and work too closely with the cops or an internet watchdog group like Perverted Justice.
We're talking about Dateline NBC's To Catch a Predator series that airs from time to time. We're talking with Douglas McCollum, a contributing writer for the Columbia Journalism Review and an author of an article about this series, and with Xavier Von Erck, the founder of PervertedJustice.com. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Sandy joins us. Sandy on the line from Salt Lake in Utah.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I called to say that as a former police officer, I don't agree with the idea that this may in some way be generating news or generating the cases, or is it entrapment? Either entrapment needs to be offering the perpetrator both the incentive and the opportunity, and I think the incentive is mostly personal for these people. It's nothing really being offered. It's primarily just the opportunity. So I don't think at any stretch that there's any kind of entrapment issue. And as to the idea of the whether it's a value provided by the news or something that the news should not be involved in,
mm-hmm.
my feeling is that the news should also be an advocate of the people, and we the people ought to be aware of potential problems within our communities, within our nation, and if there's a threat to us in those communities, a threat to our children. And so I appreciate the fact that...
So you think this is public service?
Yes, actually,
all right.
I do.
Let me get a response to different parts of your call from our guests. Xavier Von Erck, entrapment, has that come up? There have been dozens of men, more than 30, convicted or confessed. Has that come up as a defense in their cases?
No, because in the vast majority of these cases, these people are predisposed towards this crime. We don't make first contact with individuals in chat rooms. They make first contact with us. They're looking for minors online, and no sane defense attorney would even offer a defense of entrapment. It's a negative defense for their client, and all the ones who have offered it, all their clients have been convicted. We have zero acquittals and 129 convictions, and another about 400 criminal cases still ongoing. Entrapment's just not something that, you know, for the layman who doesn't understand the term, they might think it's an issue, but for us it's not, because what we do doesn't apply.
Mm-hmm. And Douglas McCollum, on Sandy's other point, he thinks that if these situations exist in our communities, we ought to know about it.
Sure, and I don't disagree with that. You can report on this story, and people have reported on this story and shed light on it, and I think that's absolutely a good thing. My issue, again, is doing it as a sort of an undercover sting operation, working with the police and working with an internet watchdog group and paying them at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any problem with reporting the story, and I think it's a good thing that the story is reported.
And again, that's a question more for NBC than for Perverted Justice.
Absolutely.
Here's an email we got from a DJ who writes, if you'd asked me about this a year ago, I would have said entrapment, but as the father of a 9-week-old girl, I am now firmly on the other side. Funny how one's mind changes about a lot of things after a baby appears. And that gets to a broader point that you were making, Douglas McCollum. Yes, the majority of the men who show up in these stings are unsympathetic, to put it mildly. Do you fear that this is some sort of a slippery slope, that you know, similar kinds of stings are going to be run for less publicly annoying things?
I'm wary of that term. As George Will said, life is a slippery slope.
Yes.
I think that I think the news divisions are under a tremendous amount of pressure for ratings, and the To Catch a Predator series has been a clear ratings winner. It's really done well, and it has been compelling television, at least to this point. It's a winning formula for TV news. So imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. It wouldn't surprise me if people found other ways to do these investigations, and some might be appropriate. Again, I think that the manner in which they're done and how they're done is key. And I think there are good ways to do public service journalism without doing the kinds of things that the To Catch a Predator series does.
Sandy, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. We'd also like to thank Xavier Von Erck for his time today. He's the founder of Perverted Justice, Snowbound, as he speaks to us today in Portland, Oregon. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
And our thanks as well to Douglas McCollum, a contributing writer for the Columbia Journalism Review. And he joined us today from the studios of our member station in New Orleans, WWNO. Thank you for your time today.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
We're going to continue the subject after we come back from a short break. And again, if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Also, the UN's new estimate of almost 100 civilians dying per day in Iraq. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're wrapping up our conversation about the NBC Dateline series, To Catch a Predator. And joining us now is Richard Rappaport, freelance writer and author of an op-ed called Dying and Living in Cops America, which was a critique of To Catch a Predator, among other TV shows. He joins us today from the studios of member station KQED in San Francisco. Nice of you to join us.
Thank you, Neil. We're here shivering in California, but we'll do the best we can.
I'm sure you'll suffer along. You write about a zero-tolerance America and how programs like To Catch a Predator factor into that. What are you talking about?
Well, I think what we've had over the last several decades is a redefinition of what the role of police are as opposed to what families should be taken care of, say. And so, you know, when we have TV shows like To Catch a Predator or Cops, when they show us a kind of policing that is maybe different and more robust than people are used to, it tends to move the ball forward somewhat. So I, you know, when the piece came out, I got a tremendous number of emails, and a lot of people were frightened. And there's a woman from Joplin, Missouri, which is not exactly a hotbed of radicalism, who wrote and said, I don't want to watch these types of programs. They will make violent police action look normal and justified. They'll make people accept that type of policing. So I'm very concerned that, you know, as we sort of mix together entertainment and police enforcement, you have a situation where we are at risk of kind of forgetting what good policing actually is about.
Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, to say that there is a problem with online predators, and to be fair, this NBC series, it's not especially violent.
Well, I think that's right. But if you go back and look, for example, at the Perverted Justice website, you know, you see things that make this not normal. You know, they sell classic underwear, thongs, on which it's written contents aged at least 18 years. You know, that kind of thing, to just sort of accept that as the basis of, you know, of this kind of action is very scary. You know, and I know NBC has latched onto something good here, but it just seems to me that there's a tremendous danger in just kind of letting people like Perverted Justice sort of into the tent, you know, just without questioning who they are, where they came from. And is this really a good thing for American justice?
Is what you're suggesting that NBC ought to be covering who is Perverted Justice and what are they doing, as opposed to paying
that
them?
You know, that might
ratings?
Not be. They won't, but maybe they should. You know, maybe they should look inside before they sort of come out. And you know, when you have somebody like Chris Hansen, when you listen to him, he's generally speaking in the third person. I mean, I'm a little scared of the Grand Inquisitor sort of showing up and in the third person. Taking these people apart. You know, it's the other thing is, of course, that they are people beyond the pale. As you said earlier, you know, I mean, once sort of this runs its course, what's next? You know, are we going to take people, you know, who want to have parties for the ACLU and kind of get them and, you know, entrap them into something?
It's hard to believe that would be as titillating enough to generate a lot of interest in terms of TV viewing.
Well, you know, it's funny how second and third generation television shows kind of, you know, break down that way. The latest last week, CBS premiered a show called Armed and Famous, which kind of takes B-grade celebrities like LaToya Jackson and gives them police training and then kind of sends them out into the mean streets. I'm not sure that's a real good use of our police resources, but, you know, I could be wrong.
Let's get a caller on the line. This is Jay. Jay's with us from Aiken in South Carolina.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was also thinking about what he just said, and the whole reason why I originally called was bring up the point of, like, free speech. Now, I am sure I'm one of the chorus of voices that are basically thinking that the whole Dateline NBC series is over the top because, you know, I'm glad the earlier caller mentioned the fact that early in the show it was meant just to be investigative reporting, and mm-hmm. then later on you see these almost sting-like qualities in which, like, here are the police waiting after the individual walks out the building. I mean, that seems kind of almost like an open-shut deal before you can. Now, I look at, like, say, an idea like sexual predatorial nature. I totally do not agree with that. But, like, if you think about it, you can also use the same almost like monolithic example like with drugs. There has probably records of sorts since, like, even the ancient Egyptians, Roman times, sexual, quote-unquote, you know, deviation. Therefore, is the concept of the Internet and a sexual predator only something new, I question, or is it something that's been there? And so basically what I point at is I've been, you know, I went to college, and I know for a fact, like, say you take 5 minutes of chatting, and when you say, hey, how are you doing today? Now, because the thing about the Internet, unless we got the voice software, sees how the...
Yeah, Jay, I think the distinction that they draw in the program between online chatting and the First Amendment and doing something that might be in violation of the law is when you agree to go to a meeting and do something and act in furtherance of your conversation, an act, I think, is what's required. Though I gather in some states just even soliciting for this is against the law.
Exactly, but that was my point. What's the dividing line between, hey, just simply flirting and chatting, and what is, hey, this is the predator, he's out to, you know, cause harm to the younger girls of America.
Yeah. Is that something that you would agree with, Richard Rappaport?
Well, I think the window is narrowing. You know, it's going to, as more, you know, as sort of police, it seems to me, you know, as the role expands, as they intrude into more areas, it seems to me that we end up having less leeway in what we can think of and do. You know, talking about zero tolerance America, you know, it used to be that, you know, in America, it was three strikes and you were out. You know, it was kind of the baseball metaphor. You always had another chance. And it seems to me that now we're down to probably two strikes on our way to one. You know, this is not a very forgiving society. And I think it seems to me you've got to be very, very careful when you, you know, you take people like, you know, even if they are the scum of the earth, which, you know, we've all admitted that. And that's kind of the, you know, the insurance policy that Perverted Justice and Chris Hansen have. These guys... You know, cannot. They're defenseless in the sense that nobody's going to defend them.
They're indefensible.
They are, well, except that of course we have a constitution that
another issue legally.
Yeah,
but yeah,
yeah, yeah.
All right. Thanks very much. Appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you.
Richard Rappaport is a San Francisco-based freelance writer and author of the op-ed "Dying and Living in Cops America: A Critique of To Catch a Predator" and other television programs. He joins us today from the studios of KQED, our member station in San Francisco. When we come back, the death tolls of civilians in Iraq.